Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 574, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Victor Kozeny's Last Stan, spelled S-T-A-N, being recorded on October 29th of 2006. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Barry and the Boys, Welcome to Terrorland, and numerous articles on the Mad Cow Morning News. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. I got something I got to talk about here because this affects me, affects your listeners, affects you, affects us all. I've been sued again, this time by Makram Chams, the Lebanese individual who owned a convenience store here that he abandoned after 9/11. Now, I knew this suit was coming, and I'll tell you how I knew, but I've got to raise. I can do one of two things, and nobody should feel sorry for me for getting sued because it's a cost of doing business when you're doing what I'm doing. But I can't mount a defense unless I have the money to, unless I can raise $3,000 to $5,000. Otherwise, I can settle a lawsuit, and you'll never hear me mention Makram Chams' name again. Okay? So the question is what is finding out the truth about 9/11 worth to you, worth to your listeners, worth to each one of us? I'm doing the most I can. I can't make money grow on trees, and I can't pay an attorney unless I'm able to raise the money now to defend myself. And let me tell you why I think it'd be really interesting to do so. Makram Chams is at the heart of what we're talking about. It was at Makram Chams' convenience store that the terrorists hung out. It was at Makram Chams' convenience store that they received money orders from the UAE. In fact, amazingly, I was at the 9/11 commission hearings the last three or four, and the FBI was going through their song and dance about how the terrorists had received no help from any outside source, you know, and their money came from Al-Qaeda sources, and the biggest amount they received was $50,000, and as he was saying that, they slapped a slide, a picture of the money order that had come from the UAE for $50,000, and where it came to was 201 Nokomis, which is Makram Chams' convenience store. And I wanted to stand up and say, do y'all know who's, you know, what that address means?
What, Daniel, let me jump in for a second. What is it that Chams was the owner of this convenience store, which at which certainly many of the terrorists associated and were getting? What is the essence of his complaint? What is he charging?
You know, it's just harassment. It's strange. It says I made false statements about him. Doesn't specify what the false statements were, and then says I implied that he was torturing prisoners in Iraq. Well, I didn't know you could be sued for implying anything, but I didn't imply that. I said that what we had learned he disappeared after 9/11, and I thought, who's this guy? He's an Arab operative. And then, as we've discussed, I told you I discovered he was a partner in a gambling boat here with a mob guy from Philly.
Also, you discussed allegations that he had worked for a company which also has contracted for some of the security contracts in Iraq. But
that's an allegation. It's true. What happened was someone sent me an SEC filing of Titan Corporation, a defense contractor in San Diego, which I knew nothing about at the time. Mm-hmm. It turns out Titan Corporation was a disgraced, convicted Randy Cunningham's biggest supporter. Titan Corporation has been recently convicted of spending $20 million to fix an election in the Central African country of Benin.
Yeah, but let me, Daniel, the thing is that proving that Makram Chams worth protecting, which he did.
Arabia.
That and the fact that Titan has been involved with all sorts of things around the world doesn't mean that this, you were saying that this guy tortured people in Iraq.
I received information. They sent me the SEC filing. And here you have to list, if you're a public company, everyone's suing you. And
right.
There it was. Makram Chams sued Titan Corporation in 2005 in Saudi Arabia for $21 million.
Yeah, but
he was a contractor, apparently.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
And a contractor not for, you know, any old company, but a company that has been alleged to be part of a private intelligence network, okay? And then even more amazingly, I discovered that Chams had or was about to receive $200,000 in a settlement, in a bankruptcy settlement. Titan Corporation owned a subsidiary named Surebeam, another company I'd never heard of. And it turned out that after the anthrax attacks in early 2002, Surebeam stepped up and said, we have a machine that can irradiate and destroy anthrax, and they got a $45 million contract from the post office to provide machines, and who knows if they worked or not. But subsequent to that, Surebeam went bankrupt, as so many companies associated with the people we're talking about do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the point that I'm making, Daniel, is you made no such statement about, you never implied that Chams was torturing people in Iraq.
Of course not.
That makes it a nuisance lawsuit, you see, and possible grounds for a countersuit.
Well, that gets
dicey.
My friend Chris Milligan published a book by a guy who was a special forces guy in Vietnam.
Dan Marvin.
Yeah, exactly.
I interviewed him, by the way, many, many years ago, about 1996.
Well, I went up to Charlotte to support these guys twice, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
Chris won. But it cost them $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not winning when you make as little money as Chris or I do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not winning. You can win like one of those lawsuits and it puts you out of business. So, but this guy knows I can't countersue him. I mean, because that would cost me, a ton of money. But what they do anyway? Let me just finish, because he's getting $200,000 from Surebeam. So what is this Lebanese guy? Now remember the Lebanese. There's a lot of Lebanese in the drug trafficking worldwide. There were a lot in Iran-Contra guys, Sarkis, Sarkalian, for example, in Honduras. So who knows, how did he get to Venice, Florida? But he got $200,000 from a company that was protecting us from anthrax. And what the hell did he do for that? Now, these are questions that I'm going to get to ask him. And also, his sister, who works for a local pharmacist into whose shop Ada came with Ada's father 10 days before the attack.
Mm-hmm.
The pharmacist told me that she told him, this is of course not secondhand, that Makram was working for Titan back in 2001. So he would have been allegedly at least working for this defense contractor while at the same time accepting overseas money for the terrorists. Now, what does that mean? Now he's suing me. And what he probably didn't realize before suing me, see, first of all, he types his name into a search engine, and there's 15,000 hits, recapitulating what I've already said about him. So he gets hot, and he goes, well, I'm rich. He owns a half dozen gas stations and oil companies. I'm going to sue this son of a gun. And what he didn't realize, what these people often don't realize, is that if he sues me, I get to depose him. I get to question under oath somebody closely associated with the terror network in some capacity or other, if I'm able to raise enough money to carry the lawsuit that far. But I can't do it. I can't do it unless people go to my website and send it money to the defense fund. I can't. There's no way I'll be able to. So it's all a question of, like, how much do you want to know? How much you willing to pay to find out answers to questions you want to know? So I had to get that out there, Dave. You know, there's other people out there that are professional at raising money. Okay, we all know who they are. Okay, their computers are always breaking. They're always being attacked. I've never been that way. Yeah, probably I'd have to hire Rami Obatrami's Genesis Intermedia, which was set up 10 years ago to spam the internet, in order to be able to do that, and I can't. So I am now going to have to, like, put it out there. I've got 10 days to raise $3,000 to $5,000. Otherwise, I'll just settle a lawsuit, and I won't be able to say his name again, and we'll have lost something. Now, because I was able to depose the German pilot that sued me down in Naples, I learned a lot more about Wolfgang Boringer, and the FBI is actively interested in him at this point.
Mm-hmm. Boringer, by the way, was one of the Germans that Mohammed Atta, the 911 hijacker, called his brother. He also is part of this global network. He is a former pilot for Viktor Kozeny, the Pirate of Prague, a Czech international criminal involved with more connections than a switchboard, and somebody involved with this same former Soviet Central Asian drug trafficking intelligence connected network, of which some of the 911 hijackers and apparently Hilliard Aviation and others, or Hoffman Aviation and others, were part.
It's so interesting that you'd have mentioned the Carl Duisberg thing. Because let's talk for a minute about Viktor Kozeny now, shall we? Kozeny was who Wolfgang Boringer, close associate of Atta, flew for 2 years and probably longer. And the outlines of his story was that he came to the U.S. As an 18-year-old refugee from Czechoslovakia, while it was still being run by the Soviet Union, and went to Harvard, made a success of himself, went back at the age of 23 when Czechoslovakia became capitalist, and within 2 years controlled one-third of the Czechoslovakian economy. Then he went on to attempt to purchase the state oil company in the country of Azerbaijan, and that's when he went crosswise with the U.S. because we have designs on that oil too. And the Supreme Court of the Bahamas ruled at the end of last month that he is extraditable, and they are extraditing him to New York to face charges of stealing $150 million from American investors, including former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell, whose personal plane used to fly, Kozeny's personal plane used to fly Mitchell around, okay? It's so interesting you mentioned Carl, because I looked at his beginnings, because originally I was interested, how did Atta get from Cairo to Hamburg? How did a guy who wasn't smart enough, didn't have good enough grades to get into graduate school in Cairo, get recruited to go to Hamburg, okay? Well, Kozeny's story on the outline sounded the same, so I looked into it. Kozeny and his family escaped from Czechoslovakia to Berlin when he was 17. At the age of 18, goes the official story. He met an American scholar who was giving a lecture in Berlin, and the American scholar says 6 weeks later he was surprised to open his door in New Mexico, and here was the kid that he had spoken to briefly, going, "Hi, I'm in the U.S., I'm here." So the scholar says he housed him for a month and then turned him over to another scholar who housed him for a couple months, and then the kid, through connections, was gotten into Harvard. Okay. Well, I thought, who are these two guys? They gave their names but said nothing about them. And I learned that both of the scholars that this kid lived with when he first came to the U.S. were involved in Reagan's Star Wars program. One of them was a leading astrophysicist, and the other one was head of the Air Force's military weapons Star Wars program. And that when Kozeny went to Harvard after spending like 6 months with these guys, the FBI was suspicious enough to investigate him for being a KGB agent.
Interesting, because one of the many tributaries, one of the facts of life in this underworld that we're looking at is that some elements of the Russian mob, and one of the things that I ask about is how an institution which has grown out of the economic basket case of the industrialized world, namely the former Soviet Union, all of a sudden it has become the cutting edge, albeit an illegal one, of the global free markets. And some of the early origins of the Russian mob, as it's come to be known, had basically some elements of KGB and also the GRU, Russian Military Intelligence, had apparently... Some of the genesis of this comes from there, so it's possible that as the Soviet Union was disintegrating, some elements, including perhaps Kozeny, were looking to the future and saying, "Well, socialism doesn't work. Now let's try capitalism and see if we can make our grade this way, so to speak, or make the grade this way." So Kozeny, because this is news to me, Daniel. By the way, I want to call people's attention to the latest article on the Mad Cow News website. It's called Russian Mob Linked to 911 Hijackers. If we don't get a chance to cover all of the stands, that is one of the areas where Viktor Kozeny, the man we're talking about, held sway. But now, going back to what you just discussed, Daniel, Viktor Kozeny... shows up in the United States on the doorstep of a professor in New Mexico who, it turns out, was deeply involved with Reagan's Star Wars program.
That's correct.
Also, Kozeny's networking had to do with an Air Force officer who was involved with...
Who was the head of the Air Force's space weapons program.
And these are the people... With whom Viktor the young now he was like 18 now, right?
Right, he's 18.
So
of course their stories, they're only asked about how these two Star Wars guys are only asked about how they know how they know Kozeny after Kozeny's become an internationally notorious figure, and of course they're covering their ass. I mean, that's what anyone would do. So I mean, their stories are certainly open to question. It's certainly interesting that, I mean, it's beyond interesting. It's, amazing that this 18-year-old kid, was entered the U.S. apparently through the auspices of American military, folks associated with the Star Wars program, then went to Harvard where he was no great guns, but barely got out. But I wouldn't, sneer at anyone for that because I don't know that I could have. But when he got out of Harvard at the age of 23, he moved to Czechoslovakia and 6 months later was running round-the-clock television advertising urging Czechoslovak citizens to turn over their coupons that they were given to purchase shares in newly privatized corporations. And he had a sales force of 15,000 people going door to door. Now,
and this was at the age of 23.
Exactly.
Now, jumping back, our boy wonder here, Kozeny.
Right. We don't believe in boy wonders. Well, anybody that shows up, anyone that's producing a movie at the age of 27, like Jack Abramoff, is doing it with money like from South African military intelligence, which is where his money came from.
That's where Abramoff's money came from?
Oh, sure. Money to produce Red Dawn came from South African military intelligence.
Because I was not aware of. I mean, I try to keep up with as many things. By the way, this is during the apartheid era, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because
to do anything. The movie was filmed in Namibia with South African military support.
Okay. Because I was not aware of that in the apartheid era.
You know how I know that?
No.
Because I was that fact stuck out at me because I was in L.A. writing screenplays that weren't getting made into movies. At the same age, at the same time, Jack Abramoff was producing movies in South African military intelligence. And I can assure you, your listeners, that no one from South African military intelligence ever approached me offering to produce one of my screenplays.
Well, no, all of these things are more than a little significant. Because the stuff about Kozeny that you just mentioned, he's all of 18. He's from Czechoslovakia. And here he is, like a latter-day, you know, Tom Sawyer. He stands there with his straw hat in hand, barefoot, on the doorstep of a guy who's helping to direct a Star Wars program, and also who's deeply involved with Star Wars, and also our 18-year-old barefoot boy from Czechoslovakia is also trafficking around with the Air Force officer involved with procurement for Star Wars.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely true.
But it
makes you question their stories.
By the way, one quick element, because Abramoff, as we looked at, another part of this global network concerned the Sun Cruise casino boats that Abramoff and company took over after the Gus Boulos murder. So Abramoff is part of the same network, but I would note that in the apartheid era, the apartheid government was run by an organization called the Bruderbund, or Brotherhood in English. It means Bruderbund is Afrikaans. It basically, to make a long story short, is a direct offshoot of the German Nazi Party under Hitler. It worked with the Nazis and was reorganized in the early 40s along the lines of the German Nazi Party. So that's simply by way of looking at where Abramoff's juice in part came from. That global network involves some very, very interesting elements and people.
And then, of course, you have Miami attorney Michael Farkas, who founded the company,
uh-huh,
that apparently is allowed to own planes that bring in 5.5 tons of cocaine with impunity, and the backers of that company. He is the American representative of an ultra-nationalist Zionist party representing the settlers in Israel. And the biggest amount of money, apparently, that came, he got money from Titan Corporation in 2000, but his other biggest backer was an investment group called the Tlaib Group, which includes Saudi financiers, the head of the National Guard in Kuwait, who's
uh-huh,
a member of the Kuwaiti royal family. I mean, so you have Gulf financiers doing business with ultra-nationalist Jews, and I just scratch my head when I see stuff like that.
Well, this is a global network, and it touches on a lot of different things and people. Daniel, very interesting that Boy Wonder Skorzeny, I keep saying Skorzeny, Otto Skorzeny, but the Boy Wonder Skorzeny was hooked up with these people, even as a young man, he's hooked up. That is stunning to me. What it means is that his networking began at an early age. Talking about Wolfgang Boehringer and your article about the Russian mob linked to 911 hijackers, Skorzeny's been deep. This whole crew is deeply involved with activities in the stands. That was the pun in the title of the broadcast. Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Turkestan, or Tajikistan, rather, and some of these other stands. And that is one of the areas that the Club Hopsicker luxury tour has taken us. Where your latest part of your travelogue brings us to former Soviet Central Asia, courtesy of Viktor Skorzeny.
And so I looked up. I mean, when it turned out that the heroin on Wally Hilliard's planes was coming from a Russian mob guy with ties in Tashkent, okay, I became more sensitized to news that otherwise would have gone over my head. Kurt Weldon, Republican representative Kurt Weldon, is in trouble currently because his daughters had some big contract with one of the stands. And the other thing was Bob Ney. Bob Ney, the Ohio Republican linked to Abramoff, who's going to prison, okay? One of the things he got popped for was accepting free trips to London through an aviation company called FAZ Aviation, owned by a guy whose name I can't say, El Zayat, who is tied in with Global International Airways, the Iran-Contra thing. So how amazing. I mean, it appears that Abramoff, would it surprise you to find, let me ask you this, would it surprise you if we were to discover that Abramoff was part of that informal rogue CIA, Iran-Contra, Safari Club grouping.
By the way, you made a reference. I'm glad you brought that up, Daniel, very quickly, because we're almost at the end of the talk. The Safari Club, it was an outsourced U.S. intelligence operation, but basically literally outsourced to a Saudi finance network. As globalization and privatization are becoming the watchwords of our epoch, so to speak, that same thing is happening with national security matters, including intelligence and military operations, and it's one of the things that makes pinning down some of the players much more difficult, because how many of them are actually active duty military or intelligence, or how many of them have been outsourced or off the shelf, now working in private capacity but using their connections, is an interesting thing to contemplate, because Khozani and this whole network goes to a lot of interesting places. I want to encourage people to examine the network, Russian Mob Link to 911, examine the article, Russian Mob Link to 911 Hijackers, to see how Viktor Khozani and Wolfgang Berlinger's set of links not only goes to former Soviet Central Asia, but also how, once again, moving back in time, it reveals connections with players in the Iran-Contra affair. And indeed, Daniel, in assessing your work, I've noted that running all the way from Barry and the Boys, your first book, all the way through that book, through your second book, Welcome to Terrorland, and through many of your articles, the networks not only run around the world, but they also go backward in time, stretching back through the Iran-Contra and Iraq-Gate affairs, going back all the way to networks overlapping some of the connections to the assassination of President Kennedy.
Yeah, that's true. It just makes you wonder I have heard it said, that the conspiracy is always against the middle class. And it is at least conceivable that the elites of the world, represented by countries' intelligence agencies like the CIA and the KGB, have gotten together and are treating the rest of us as if we all live on a plantation that they own. I mean, that's at least possible. But again, I stick with facts on the ground and try not to speculate, because I'm not all that smart. But look, let me finish by, I mean, if anyone, one of your readers has a couple $1,000 they don't mind parting with, to get a deposition from Makram Chams, who knows a lot more about 9/11 than either one of us does, I would urge them to get in touch with me. I don't want to have to settle this thing if I can avoid it. Because I'm in this to find things out, not to make it easy for myself.
Well, I tell you, I refer people to the articles, and if there are people either with largesse and or perhaps a crusading tort lawyer or two who might like to represent you pro bono, then that is up to them. But I assume, Daniel, that we're going to be hearing about Khozani's links with the Star Wars-connected people in the not-too-distant future?
I probably should have written about it before now. What happens is even though you know... See, I knew I was being sued by this guy 3 months ago when I found out that he was getting $200,000 from this anthrax company, Surebeam, that was a Titan subsidiary that went bankrupt. I called his lawyer in that bankruptcy filing in San Diego, and I said, how is this Makram Chams guy? What's he getting $200,000 for? And the lawyer laughed on the phone, and he said, I know who you are, he said to me. He said, and I know that Mr. Chams is planning on suing you, so I don't think I should say anything more. So I've known for a couple months this is going to be still when it happens.
Dan, we are all out of time. We are out of time here. So what we're going
to
do.
To you, bud.
Okay, listen, we have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker. Visit his website at www.madcowprod.com. This is Side 2 of For the Record 574, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Viktor Khozani's Last Stand. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.